You just tuned in to Set for Success with your host, Richard Lannan, but you knew that already, didn't you? We're going to continue our journey to help you create a roadmap to change your business, career, or life, and we're going to do this through chatting with one person at a time to uncover people's lives, their business, their journey, their successes to help you create the success that you deserve, and you do deserve to be successful. I'd like you to say that right now. I always get my listeners to do this. I deserve to be successful. You do. Whatever success means for you, you should define it. Don't listen to anybody else. Figure out what success means to you and achieve it. All right. So if you listen to the show, you know I love quotes. I always like to start off with a quote of the day, so to speak. And so today's quote's this. People and organizations need to trust that their digital technologies are safe and secure. Otherwise, they won't embrace a digital transformation. Digitalization and cybersecurity must evolve hand in hand. Now, that quote actually comes from a website with no mentioned author. I usually try to feature an author, some quote for an author, but in this case, I don't have one. But here's the case. It does come from Siemens' website, from the Charter of Trust. And I thought it was sort of an interesting way to sort of open a monologue because we're going to chat a little bit about technology and a little bit about security and safety and those kind of things today. Because the digital world changes everything. Think about it. Artificial intelligence and big data analytics are revolutionizing the decision-making process. Billions of devices are being connected on the Internet of Things and interacting on an entirely new level and scale. Your house is getting smarter. Your car is getting smarter. Your phones are getting smarter. All your technology is all connecting. So I have a question for you. Do you feel safe and secure? Think about that question for a moment. Do you feel safe and secure? It's an interesting question. Very, very interesting question overall. As people, it's easy to blindly go about our lives connecting all technologies, agreeing to whatever comes into our email without giving it a second thought. Think about it. How many times have you received something in your email that says, we've just updated our agreement? And you go, okay. And just click, okay. And you accept it right away. Or something shows up in your email and you just open an attachment without even thinking twice about it. We all do those kind of things. As technology advances, our networks become smarter and we become more connected. As data moves faster than a wink of an eye, our security and our safety become more important. I find it interesting that people will take care when they go out for a walk down the street. They'll think about the time of day, the time of year, their location. They'll pay attention to their surroundings. Or they will protect their valuables in their home with locks, alarms, and a safe, and make sure everything is secure when you leave for that all-important vacation or trip or weekend away. But when it comes to their personal or business computing, they open themselves up for ransom without understanding the very basics of what's about keeping themselves safe for their business and their family and themselves personally. So I ask you, do you feel safe and secure? Do you know? So here's what we're going to do today. As I gave it some thought, I wonder who could come in and talk to us a little bit about technology, about infrastructure and the various things that are going on. And a bit about, I guess, what it comes down to safety and security when it comes to our technology. Someone who knows technology industry and who helps small businesses and people like you and me to put things in place to make sure that we stay safe and secure. So I'm looking forward, and I was looking forward to chatting with this person today. I'd like to take this opportunity to welcome Kyle Milakin to the show today. Kyle, I believe your company is Informatics Technology Group.
Did Informatics Technology Group,
yeah. Yeah. Welcome to the show, Kyle.
Thanks, Richard.
Yeah, it's nice to have you back. I know you've been on with me before. I think it's been a few times we've talked various things. Now, you have a very interesting business, and maybe that's where we can sort of start, because I think the last time we chatted, you're a little bit smaller and you've grown a little bit. But let's start off there. What is it you guys do?
So one of our primary areas is what's known in the industry as managed services. So we are the IT department for a variety of different organizations that don't have the size that they would require their own internal IT staff. Or they, they don't want to have that as part of their core operations. So,
yeah. So that's really what you offer, right?
Exactly. So we'll handle all of their back office infrastructure, manage their backups and disaster recovery, manage their security, manage their servers, manage their networks, and then take care of all of their employees and user problems.
Yeah. Just to give our listeners some idea. Now I know that you're business to business, so you don't do business to consumer home technology.
Correct. Yeah, business
right?
to business.
So the type of clients or type of organizations you would work with, how would you define them?
professional services companies, engineering firms, manufacturing companies, construction companies, those types of things.
Are there any particular size groups that you work with, like anything from the small half a dozen
five
people?
To 150, okay. Some larger ones where we have, they have their own internal IT departments, but they need some specific project help.
So you augment the department, right? That kind of thing. Yeah. And so you've grown a bit into the space. So that's in our marketplace, that's considered that small to medium size type environment. Let's talk a little bit about challenges. I mean, I am going to step back into a little bit more in your background and stuff, but if we were just sort of give sort of a wide sweep right now, what are some of the key challenges that these organizations are having? And that people are having, I guess.
Well, from a technology perspective, they're trying to rationalize aging infrastructure. So people have put things in maybe 10 years ago and haven't updated it, and trying to figure out why is an update important? What's wrong with my equipment that I bought in 2009? Doesn't seem like that long ago to most people, but it is. And there's been significant change in what the technology is and can do and how it's secured.
It's amazing how that is. And I'm actually just in the middle of a technology upgrade myself, too. And when I look at that upgrade, I mean, I run totally with laptops, right, or notebooks, whatever word you want to use. And it's fascinating to see, you know, when you have a notebook that really worked just fine. It's 10 years old. It still does what you need, right? If you just do word processing, do spreadsheets, like basic business functionality. Mm-hmm. But when you integrate or take a look at where the technology has changed, it now doesn't operate anymore. It works really slowly, or there are challenges with it, right?
Yes. One of the most significant things this year is Microsoft is ending support for Windows 7 in January of 2020. So there are a ton of people who are still on Windows 7 in a very real way.
Yeah.
And trying to get people to, you know, race against the clock, so to speak, to get everybody onto Windows 10. It's a bit of a challenge for some organizations.
Yeah, it's interesting you would actually say that as an upgrade. I know we're going to talk about security and stuff too. And I see it from a strategic perspective, where the conversation will come up about, you're talking about Windows 10, making that change, or do they jump over to the Google platform, right, the Google Doc platform? And so there's always interesting conversations that happen with that one.
Well,
too.
You still need a base operating system on your machine. So sure. Whether you're using Google's productivity suite or Microsoft's productivity suite, you still need to have a base. And most people are going to be running Microsoft's based
Windows
operations,
well,
unless you're doing Linux, but very few corporations are doing that.
Yeah, pretty much we can pretty much say that Windows owns the operating world.
Especially in corporate.
Yeah. So I think what we'll do, I think we've established very nicely what you guys do and everything. And I would really love to talk about in the next segment, and I know that you're the man to do this, talk about what some of the challenges are with the operating systems. But then we'll start to move into some of the security and safety issues and everything, too, because those kind of things must come up. So Kyle will share some of that stuff with us when we come back. We'll be right back. Hello, all. I'm hanging out with Kyle today, and we've been talking a bit about technology. Now, Kyle, just before we went on a break, we were talking a bit about the standard operating systems, right? I mean, we know that there's a big change happening right now. Lots of people having systems in their office or at home, and they're moving from an older Windows platform to a newer Windows platform. From my perspective, from a business perspective, I always think those are awesome because it creates opportunities, it creates jobs. I'm always looking at the positive side of this. I know from a small business perspective, they might be sitting there going, oh, really? I got to put money into this again, right? But I can't help but think as technology ages and as things change, right, not just at the aging, but just how quickly things change at the click of a button, and I think everybody knows that now, businesses must experience some threats, right, in order to sort of keep up the speed and everything. So maybe you could sort of talk to us a little bit about what some of the threats businesses are experiencing, and then we'll start to talk about what some of those solutions might be.
Probably the single most prominent threat today is ransomware. So,
you know, we hear that word all the time, ransomware. I mean, I think we can all understand the word ransom. I'd like to think so, but maybe we can start there and sort of talk about, you know, sure, what is ransomware and how do you end up getting it on your computer system or within your business?
So more often than not, ransomware gets onto your system via a malicious email. So, you know, somebody sends you a fake invoice. It may or may not be from somebody you know. It has an attachment or a link or something. It wants you to take some sort of action from an email. Once you've actioned that email, the ransomware gets installed on your machine, often without your knowledge. And then what it does is it sits there, and in the background, it begins encrypting all of your files, all of your file servers, everything that's of value, all the business data that's of value. And then you can, unless you have the unlock key, you can't get to it. So it'll leave you a ransom note that says, if you'd like that key, here's an email to get in touch with us and we'll negotiate the price.
Yeah, well, enhanced ransom, right? Mm-hmm. It's like basically they've now taken your computer hostage.
Correct.
And now we're saying, if unless you actually give us some money, you know, we're going to...
So a couple of years ago, ransomware was kind of a little bit in its infancy, and they would give you, you know, for $1,000 worth of Bitcoin, you can have your have the unlock or decryption key. Now these are more sophisticated, organized crime groups are behind a lot of the more sophisticated, large-scale attacks, and it says, you know, please call for pricing.
Yeah,
and it's they know who they have,
yeah,
and the price is dependent on who they have held hostage.
Can you give us an example of maybe something that might have been in popular media, in other words, of a ransomware thing that went around? Do you have any stories of those?
Yeah, so we there's a couple of organizations in town here that have been hit with some pretty major ransomware infestations. It comes in again through email. There's a whole ecosystem of compromise as a service going on in the dark web world. So
the dark web world.
What happens?
You know, I was
going
to ask you about the dark web because it's showing up on, again, popular culture.
Yeah.
When I say popular culture, internet shows, Netflix shows, television shows, those kind of things.
Sure.
And go ahead.
So basically, there's a couple different groups. One of the ones that's going around now is a group called Emotet. It's a Trojan-based virus that comes in via email. And they're not actually doing any damage to your organization. They are obtaining access to your organization and then selling that access to whoever wants to buy it.
Oh, really?
So
they're selling your data.
We have CJOB here, and who wants access, and whoever wants to, they can look at the size of the organization and say, you know what, I'm not going to compromise them. I'm just going to install my Bitcoin miners and use their computing power to mine for Bitcoins, which will have some monetary value. Or they look at the size of the organization and say, you know what, it's a pretty prominent radio station. We're going to put some sophisticated ransomware on here and try and hold them hostage for some money.
Yeah.
So there's an economy of different organized crime groups that are selling their own services back and forth to each other. And, you know, the Emotet group, for example, they get paid by a ransomware organization who says, thanks for compromising CJOB. Let's exploit them and see what we can get out of it. So they've paid Emotet for that service. Emotet's got their money.
Yeah.
They're on to the next thing. Ransomware group is going to try and get some money out of CJOB.
Just for clarity,
this is a hypothetical. CJOB has not been
compromised. Yeah, thank you for saying that, because I'm just sitting there. Okay, we're saying this too much. No, we're not. We're not saying it's been compromised. We're doing total hypothetical here, and that, you know, we could be talking about any organization. We could be talking about any provincial government. We can be talking about any local municipal government.
Yeah, and you read in the paper, there's been a bunch of municipal and local governments. There was a city in Florida just recently that they ended up having to pay $600,000 for the decryption key to get back access to their infrastructure.
Which is interesting, actually. I understand that this is organized crime, but I'm going to sort of use a weird word here. Is it legitimate organized crime? In other words, are these individuals that they recognize organized crime, but if you pay them, they will actually give you your encryption back?
Absolutely. And they actually, a lot of these groups are quite sophisticated. They'll have a help desk that you can call in if you've never bought Bitcoin before and you need Bitcoin to do the transaction. They have people and a support organization built
that will actually help you break the law or help them.
Yeah,
in terms
and
of
you know what?
The
second there's some honor among thieves, I guess.
Well,
because
that's
the second
what I'm asking,
that nobody
right?
gets their decryption key, the whole system falls apart. So people want there to be some level of trust.
Yeah,
when you're
yeah.
dealing with these guys saying. Yeah. If you give us our ransom money, we will give you your data back.
Yeah, exactly, right? Yeah, and that's interesting. Honor among thieves. I mean, who would have thought that if you're going to operate on this illegal level and hold organizations, even small businesses, for ransom, that you would actually put a level of legitimacy or in there, in the sense that you'd run it like a regular business.
This is big business. These organizations have raised hundreds of millions of dollars by exploiting various organizations over the last couple of years.
Where do these organizations exist, mostly in the world, or do we know?
Mostly in Eastern Europe and Russia.
Okay, so we're sort of understanding.
That's what the best knowledge says. I mean, technically, these people could be anywhere. Anyway. They could be up the street and routing their traffic from those countries.
But yeah, even as I started to ask that question, I understand, I'll call it the legitimate web. I don't know if you call it the white web or the dark web and that. And then you look at how, as you mentioned, you can route yourself through. The reality of it is you could be down the beach in Florida drinking pina coladas with your computer on your lap, and you could be, you know, holding a company for ransom.
Yeah. It's likely it does happen that way.
It does, yeah.
There's
exactly.
No way to know.
Yeah, why would you want to be, I don't think I'd want to live in the cold north right. And that kind
exactly.
of stuff, right? Of anywhere in the world, or even for that matter, the Antarctic. It does actually create some interesting questions in terms of where things would go when we come down to ransomware. I think what we'll do is we'll get you to talk about how do you solve this particular problem for your business just right after the break.
Sounds good.
Hello all, welcome back. You know what, today we're talking with Kyle and we're talking about security and safety, but we're really talking about your technology security, your business security, and even your own personal security and safety when it comes to technology, particularly when we're talking about ransomware. And, Kyle, you're providing me a lot of really updated information about ransomware. I mean, I've been very aware of it. I'm amazed at how things have changed over the years. Being somebody who formerly used to work in a technology industry and I built my career on the back of the technology industry earlier in my life, just listening to you now and how things have actually advanced, even over the last 10 years, the last few years, and some of the issues, what are some of the solutions? I mean, obviously, as a consumer of technology, a user of technology, whether personally or in business, I mean, we need to make sure that we understand, where things are going and what we can do to protect ourselves. And I suspect, based on how rapid technology changes, the solutions are changing as rapidly.
Yeah, so there's been a seismic shift in the security landscape of what you need to be doing to protect
yourself. Seismic shift. I love it. I love it.
So traditionally, you would run in your home and in organizations antivirus.
Yeah, now, like a Norton or a McAfee.
There's
McAfee?
A whole stack.
There's a whole
stack
bunch of
products.
Them, right? Yeah.
There's lots. Yeah. But these traditional antivirus engines are signature based. So that's no longer doing it. You need anti-exploit based security software.
Okay.
And I'll get into what that all
means.
Yeah,
so you're going to have to tell us what signature-based means, an anti-exploit.
Exactly.
So you're going to have to talk
signature-based,
about...
I love to use the analogy of an electronic store. So okay. Electronic store is your computer, and a signature-based antivirus software is a guy at the front door who has a book of police mugshots of known bad actors.
Yeah, okay.
And as people are coming in and out of the electronic store, it looks at the mugshot book and says, oh, we've seen this guy before.
Sorry, you
can't come in.
Yeah.
Or no, we haven't seen them. Come on in.
Yeah.
That's no longer cutting it in a security world. Now you need to have behavior-based anti-exploits. So what that is in the electronic store analogy is having that same security guard watch for suspicious behavior.
Yes.
So a guy backs up a truck to the store and starts loading in big screen TVs into the back of the truck. That is malicious behavior. It doesn't matter whether or not we've seen that person before.
Yes.
The mugshot book is useless. So we're going to stop that exploit of the electronic store based solely on the bad behavior that's going on.
It's interesting you would say that because I would think security people, advanced security people and police and that get trained on behavioral cues. And that's sort of what you're saying is not just the picture or the stereotypical picture that we have of a bad person, right? Or a criminal, it's really the behavioral aspects.
Correct. So that's been the shift in security software. And, all of these big scale attacks are what's called a zero day. So it, the software, the malicious software, has been tuned for that specific attack. Mm. So no signature-based antivirus is ever going to pick it up because it's brand new.
Yeah.
It's a zero day. It just came out today. That's where the zero day comes.
So they call it zero day.
Exactly.
Today.
So unless you're running next-generation anti-exploit with behavior-based machine learning, you're at risk of this stuff happening to you. You could have the best signature-based antivirus in the industry.
Yeah.
It will not stand up against these zero-day attacks.
Zero. Okay, so, wow. Is there software that you can actually buy that does what we're talking
yes.
about?
Oh, yeah, there's a number of really good ones. We have our preferred partner in that space, a company called Sophos. They're far and away the industry leader in anti-exploit machine-based security software and next-generation tool sets.
Now, is that more for like a business or is that can be for a
They actually have, Sophos has a free home edition for up to 10 machines. So your listeners could go and get that today and get some of the same protection that enterprises are using on their home computers today.
Okay, will that work? So and here's my key questions, right? Just the easy ones, because I want to try to protect both the business, but also the personal person too, right? Does that software work with maybe your other antivirus signature-based software that's already on
so
your
there's,
system?
You can put it on top, the anti-exploit piece,
yes.
or they have the full suite that also does traditional signature-based antivirus and the anti-exploit engine as a single package.
Okay. I don't know this company. I'm usually pretty sharp on a lot of this stuff, but we're talking about changes and advances happening. How do you spell the name of that company, or can you
restate? Sophos. Sophos.
Sophos.
Sophos.
Okay. This does create, I guess, some interesting other questions and everything. I mean, really, what do we need to do additionally, I guess, regarding our security on our systems?
Well, you need to be running this anti-exploit-based security software on all your endpoints. Now, whether it's Sophos or another vendor that does a similarly good job, you need this. If you don't have it, you're waiting for this to happen to you.
You're waiting for this.
The other thing you need to do is you need to spend a significant amount of time training and educating your staff. Almost every single one of these major ransomware attacks starts with the compromise of a person.
Mm.
You can invest millions of dollars into the best security infrastructure that money can buy, but if you don't train your people, the people remain the weakest link. So there's all kinds of clues and, you know, ways to tell what is a malicious email and what isn't. Some of them are very well advanced, and even folks like myself have to really pause and take a good hard look at something like, wait a minute, am I expecting an invoice from you, Richard? Why would you be sending me an invoice? It's professionally written. It looks fantastic, but why would you you're not invoicing me for anything in our relationship?
The other one, too, is that you see with the banking system, right? I mean, how many people get emails that have one of the top five banks' logos on it, and it's very well professionally written. And
well, some of them are so good, they'll actually connect to the bank and download the latest ad campaign from the bank's legitimate website and show you real stuff in the email. So it's like, wow, it actually looks like Bank X sent this to me.
Yes.
And, just know that your bank would never ask you to confirm your login details or anything like that. And as a matter of fact, let's take a minute to talk about two-factor authentication.
Okay. With that, you know what? I think we'll take a short break and we'll talk about that when we return.
Sounds good.
That was called two-factor
authentication.
This is Richard Lamb for Scepter Success. We'll be right back. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. I'm hanging out with Kyle today from Informatics Group, technology group. And we've been talking a lot about security today and keeping yourself, your technology secure. By the way, I want to just sort of clarify, when we've been talking, I've been thinking, home computers, business computers, laptops and all that. The stuff we're talking about applies also to all technologies, right? So all integrated technologies. So this applies to your smartphone and that too,
absolutely.
I think. Yeah. So we were talking a little bit about security, and I think, what was the term that you used just before the break?
Two-factor authentication.
Two-factor authentication. And then I know during the break we were talking about multi-factor authentication.
Yeah.
So maybe you can talk to us a little bit
so
about
really
that.
Sure. So really there's three factors that you could have to authenticate yourself. It's something you know, something that you have, or something you are. So something you know is a password. Something you have is a token or other device. And something you are is a biometric. So The concept of two-factor authentication means that you should be using at least two of these things to authenticate yourself.
Yeah, and so if we go back to the whole idea of financial institutions, just momentary, you have your user ID and your password, but then it comes in.
So that's something you know.
That's something you know. But then it shows up and asks you a personal question.
That's still something you know.
Still something
it's not
you
a two-factor.
Okay.
So you need a token, and a lot of people will set up so that it texts you a code.
A number,
so I could disclose my password to you, Richard, either intentionally or unintentionally by falling for one of these phishing emails.
Yes.
But unless you have my phone, something you have, that password's useless to you because it's going to ask you for the one-time password token that gets texted to me.
Yeah.
And so that's a two-factor.
That's a two-factor.
That's something that absolutely every single person who is hearing this message now needs to go and set that up for themselves immediately.
And can you set that up in most? I'm going back to the financial institution side because, even in talking to my friends, we talk about how much time we actually go to banks anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know anybody who actually walks into a bank anymore. Like, really, too often they go to a bank machine or they do all their banking on their computer system. So it's something that's just part of our lives now,
So some of it is arguably two-factor. Like, if you go to an ATM, it's something you have as your debit card, something you know is your PIN. But if you compromise the PIN and then you also get your card skimmed, now they can impersonate the something you have piece. So
very easily.
You know, there's some catch-up, I think, that needs to happen in true multi-factor authentication for that. But most major applications, Google, Microsoft, things like that, are going to give you multi-factor or two-factor authentication capabilities.
So we did the two-factor, multi-factor, something you are, I think.
So biometric fingerprint. The problem with biometrics and why you haven't seen them their widespread adoption is the only true biometric that everybody has is DNA, and how many people want to
give their DNA every time they log in somewhere.
It's just not popular. So you can have thumbprints, but what if not everybody has a thumb or they have a severe burn on their thumb that doesn't work? So iris, same thing when you do an eye scan. If somebody's vision impaired, they won't be able to use that. So it's not, you need something that's universal, and that's why you haven't seen the widespread biometric
of our
adoption.
It's interesting you would say that. So I mean, you're obviously familiar with password generating technology, right? And there's some good technology out there. I mean, our household, my business uses one that we actually don't make up our own passwords. We have a 2 or 3 tier system that does it and gets all encrypted.
At the very least, people should be using a passphrase, instead of just, brown dog, you say, I like to take the brown dog for a walk, could be a passphrase. It's long, but you get used to typing and it's supposed to be difficult. Everything with security is supposed to be difficult.
The other thing is too, is you talk about words and that you can also, and I read this years ago, and that is you can use words, but as long as you translate those combination of numeric values,
make an O a zero, make an E a three, that type of stuff.
Those kind of things, right? You can also go through and sort of restructure.
But all that is useless if you fall for a phishing campaign. So coming back to end user training, you need to spend time on this. And there are tools that will allow organizations to send out a fake phishing campaign to their staff.
Yeah.
And get a report on who is, over the course of, say, 3 months, continuously falling for the same or different tricks. And then you got to sit that person down and say, listen, you're putting our whole organization at unnecessary risk. You need to take this stuff seriously.
Yeah.
And there's different training videos and things that can help them understand what they're supposed to be looking for and the risk that they're presenting to their team members.
Actually, I have a few clients I work with, and they're fairly large organizations, and I've been very fortunate to work with them. And they do exactly that. You have to go through a training program, and they, I think, at least annually it comes out. But then they'll test you. You'll get these emails, and it's just like you sit there and you read it, and you go, oh, yeah, okay. And you need to know whether it is a phishing campaign or not, and you got to be very, very careful. The other thing you can do, and I suggest to people, is that if you get something from your bank or you get something in your work email or what have you, and it doesn't look quite right, there's usually a group you can contact to verify the email.
Yeah, call them up. In the spring, popular phishing is coming from Revenue Canada. Fake.
Yeah,
we got your deposit early for you here. Just go ahead and do an e-transfer deposit, but what they're really doing is harvesting your bank credentials. So
yeah, and then they're going to take everything from you that they can.
Yeah, right? It's really sad, but this stuff works extremely well.
Yes.
And that's why people are continuing to do it. So people need to be diligent.
So we're talking about authentication. We're talking about having a three-factor authentication if you can.
Two.
Sorry, the reason why I bring up three is that I know some people that do have, that I work with, that is not just their password, but they get a token and a thumbprint.
Great.
You know, and they have those three levels, and I've watched them do it on their phones. And so, okay. What I find interesting about that is that thumbprints on your phone stay behind.
Mm-hmm.
And so unless you're actually cleaning your screen and keeping everything clean, if somebody was to actually get your phone from you, they could, in essence, pull your fingerprints off.
Yeah,
it
needs to be a balance because, at the end of the day, if somebody somebody really wants to get into your organization and spends time, money, and effort on it, they're going to get in.
Yeah.
They're going to find a way.
Yeah.
So, it's like kind of spy movies. You put a gummy bear on the phone to get the fingerprint and stuff. You just got to do a best effort so that you're not going to be falling victim to the run-of-the-mill stuff that's just out there.
When we talk about business in this particular space here, because we're trying to keep it all focused on ransomware and the whole concept of in some way, shape, or form that your business is taken for ransom, are certain organizations more targeted than others? Like, is there a general trend towards what these organized crime groups are really after?
There's a lot of this, what's called spray and pray. So just blast out as many fake email campaigns as you can and see what sticks.
Okay.
And then analyze who you have after that. And
then
that's where this ecosystem comes in, where groups that are doing the spray and pray compromise are then selling access to different sized organizations to other groups that actually do the exploit and attack.
So
they're setting the price on, hey, we have access to this, 10,000 person organization. Price for that's going to be pretty high. Therefore, your ransom is going to be pretty high because the ransom group wants to make a return on their investment in getting access to compromised stuff in the first place. So,
but the small business owner, half a dozen people, 25 people. I mean, these are, half a dozen's probably only a couple $100,000, up to, 25 people or so. They're probably a couple $1 million. I mean, they're not huge organizations. How at risk are those organizations?
Probably more at risk because they have more than likely not done any of some of these basic security stuff. Even 10-year-old technology is absent from a lot of these organizations. So they're very much at risk.
They're very much at risk.
And what these ransomware programs are going to do, they're going to wipe out your backups first and then compromise your production data.
So they make sure
even if you try and restore... unless you've architected your backup solution properly, which, organization like mine can help you do, you're going to be really having a bad day. And then you're going to get that ransom price, and it's going to be into the six figures a lot of times. And that's a large chunk of change.
That's a large chunk of change, especially for a small organization. Something that's, you don't want to be having to pay out some kind of six figure, especially if you're only
And you're just supporting organized crime.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, you get your data back, but you've funded somebody else's criminal activity.
Kyle, you're an awesome guest. I've always enjoyed having you on the show. If you had a final thought for our listeners, what might it be?
End user awareness training. It can't be overstated.
Can't be overstated.
This is where the problem starts.
Mm.
And it might not be taken seriously by a six-person automotive garage, for example, but you need to take it seriously.
Make sure your people know what's going on.
Take 10 minutes at a staff meeting and just talk to people about general security awareness.
And keep it forward.
That's your best line of defense.
If somebody were to get in touch with you, how would they go about doing that?
They can call at 204-289-3045 or email info@informanix.com, informanix.com.
Awesome. Kyle, you're a great guest. I really appreciate this. I think this is valuable information
back.
for our listeners. As listeners, if you got a thought, an idea, or a question, just send me an email at richard@setforsuccess.ca. And do remember to do your best, invest in the success of others, and make your journey count.